What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Mike Dolce Show. How are you guys doing today? I am doing freaking amazing, which is nice. Right? It's very important to be doing amazing. Why am I doing amazing? Because I do amazing. I make it a point. Common theme, right? We've been talking about this for the last few days now, and it's going to be a common theme probably for as long as we're talking. I do well because I do things as well as I can, and I look to do things better each time I do them. I look to improve my knowledge. I look to improve my skill. I look to improve my consistency. So that's a common theme and something I want you to think about, and it applies everywhere. Now, we're talking more about weight loss on this show, you know, through this outlet, but that's a means of being healthy is my belief. That's the Dolce diet way. So the healthier you are, the easier it is to perform and reach your ideal body fat, lean mass ratio. And that all comes down to just doing well, thinking well, you know, doing your best. As we do, we're jumping right in to the Q&As, mostly taken from our Facebook page this time. Brandy, what you got?
All right. Well, first we have Dan Apple from Facebook. He says, "Hey, Mike, I'm a volunteer firefighter, husband and father of two. Just got the books and loves the podcast, but he wants to know more about gaining healthy weight. He's 26 years old, 5'9", and 140 pounds.
All right, so weight gain, I understand. Now, a lot of people think the Dolce diet is all about weight loss, and, you know, fortunately, a lot of people do lose significant amounts of weight using a process similar to the Dolce diet. But people don't realize that weight gain, strength gain, that's one of my specialties. That's my fortes. I was 280 pounds at 5 feet 10 inches at one point in my life, and that was on purpose. I decided to bring my body weight up from 220 or so to 280. I was powerlifting. I liked to lift big weights at the time, and I lifted really big weights, really big weights. Actually, I would do walkouts, preparing to squat over 800 pounds. Part of my training system would be walkouts where I would take the bar from inside the rack, I would unrack it, and I would walk it out into my squat position. And I would do this with a weight in excess of what I would actually be using. So I'm strengthening that part of the lift. I was doing walkouts with over 1,100 pounds. That's an entire barbell filled with 45-pound plates. And then the smallest collar we could find, the safest, strongest collar, but the smallest we could find, we would put on the little nibs of the end. Then we would take chains. And we would hang additional 45-pound plates from these chains hanging from inside the plates on the bar. And I would do walkouts with these. Me and my buddy John Rosinski, and we did this, I think, up at Pro Fitness Gym, is a famous gym, powerlifting gym back in the day. Did it up there. And down at the fitness shop in Bradley Beach, one of the gyms I trained at quite a bit. That's kind of was my home. But that's, you know, one of the things. So weight gain, strength gain, that's one of my passions. Now, how do you do it? Well, the meal plan should be very similar. Weight loss or weight gain, I don't think the meal plan should change that much. The quantity should change just a little bit. Nutrient timing should change just a little bit to be more specific. But in general, it's the same foods eaten at the same intervals. It's the Dolce diet principles. It's earth-grown nutrients we're eating every 2 to 4 hours based on what we just did, what we're about to do. We're staying accountable to our goals. If we're trying to gain a little more muscle or lose a little more body fat, we'll pay a little more attention to our recipe and kind of skew the way that we need to gain that weight. So really, the difference comes down in the gym, the training. Now, if you guys know me, I am a fan of deadlifts, an advocate of deadlifts. Deadlifts, I think, are the most important single exercise that we can do as humans. I think it carries over everywhere else. Now, it's not the only one that we should do. There's many different ways we need to use our body, to move our body, to teach our body, to test our body. Many different ways and planes of motion, resistance or not. Everything typically is resistance because of gravity. But the applied or the increased resistance, the intentional increase of resistance, added pounds on the bar, added reps with added pounds, that's what we're trying to get to. And deadlifts are a great exercise for that because the amount of time you spend, the amount of energy you spend, your gains, your progress, It is seen through more muscle groups, through more body parts. It's truly a full body motion. It excites the central nervous system as well as the large muscles of the glutes and the hamstrings and the upper back, the trapezius, your lats. I mean, really, it's a great core exercise. Deadlifts is the way to go, certainly. And lifts like that. So if you're trying to gain size, you're trying to gain strength, guys, listen. Girls, listen. Anybody. Deadlifts, squats, pulls, pulling exercises, chin-ups, and rows. That's what you should be doing well before thinking about bench presses and things like that. Don't worry about bench presses. Do a ton of push-ups, body weight work for those pressing exercises, specifically in the beginning. Take the time, the resources, and devote them to growing the bigger muscles behind you, the more powerful, the more explosive, the more performance-oriented, the more posture-related muscle groups. They're all the ones behind you. Deadlifts is a great way to start in compound movements. Typical training systems, a 5x5 system is easy to start with, 5 sets of 5 reps. With a weight that you can handle for all 5 reps, maybe the last rep is just a little more difficult. Trying to increase your weight every time you do the session for 3 weeks and then change to something else, that's a good simple system to get onto, and you could see gains year round. As long as you change the exercise, you change the intensity, you change the rep range. So try that one. I love talking about strength stuff. I could go on and on. We could do a whole, man, a whole nother podcast just strength related.
Next question is from Shane from New Zealand. He says he just loves the Dolce diet. It's given him some awesome results, but lots of his friends are starting the juice diet. Do you know this diet, and is it good for your body not having meat or solids? I'm just a bit concerned.
Okay, Shane. What's up, man? So by juice diet, I think you're talking about what here in America, like a raw food diet, or a juicing cleanse. There's different terminology. I'm going to break your question down into two specific ways. Do you need to eat animal protein? Certainly not. You can get all the same amino acids, all the same nutrients you can get in abundance with a plant-based diet. So it's not about animals or plants. That has no difference. What the question is about juicing as opposed to actually chewing whole foods, eating whole foods. Now, I'm more of a fan of whole foods along with juices. When people talk about cleanse, I don't like cleanse specifically. There's a lot of cleanse. I think we spoke about this in episode 9. I did. I talked about cleanses a little bit. I don't like those cleanses. I don't like my body to have to go without. Now, certainly reduced portions, so I'm not overstraining my digestive system constantly. But I think if we switch over to raw foods, eaten and juiced, certainly. We have, fresh fruit and vegetable juice in my house every day, multiple times a day. But we also eat quite a bit of fruits and vegetables, in raw or, very reasonably lightly cooked states. So to totally get on a juice diet, I don't agree with. I think it could cause some problems, and I've seen some problems. I've personally had some problems. I can't go really more than a day or so. I prefer not to, or I feel worse. I think it's not that I can. I've done a lot of crazy things in my life. Lived that Spartan lifestyle of self-sacrifice, weight cutting, 40 pounds in a single week, and just doing all these things. So I certainly understand sacrifice, but I feel better. I feel like I have better results with juicing and eating raw foods for periods of time. Now, I do eat animal products at times, right now certainly, but I try and do go a third of the time, a third of the year. I'm living more of a vegan influenced lifestyle. I'm certainly, not perfect, but I try and test it and learn more about it and experience it. But with straight juicing as opposed to juicing and eating other plant-based foods, I'm not truly a fan. I think there's too many nutrients that you're not getting because you're simply drinking. And also, I think it causes problems to your digestive process. Now, like I said earlier, now unloading, deloading calories to eliminate digestive distress, well, sure, you don't want to eat surplus of calories every day without backing off a little bit. So you're dropping your calories. I do that, in a week. I'll do that once or twice a week. But the straight juice, I've never felt good on, especially for extended periods of time. A few hours with just a juice, yeah, that's great. Few days, that's really a rough life, and I don't believe it's healthy.
Ready for this one?
I am ready. Ready for anything.
This one's from Marcin Jakubowski from Warsaw, Poland. He said, "Please help. I eat a lot of Subway chicken teriyaki with lots of vegetables, and it's on whole wheat bread. What do you think about whole wheat bread? Oh, love your podcast. You're a true inspiration to me. Thank you. Oh, did I mention that I also have double meat?
Marcin. All right, so you got a lot of problems, Marcin. Where do I start? Whole wheat bread is the least of your problems if you're eating at Subway every day. Subway's motto, moniker, eat fresh. What great marketing. What false advertising, quite honestly, because what really is fresh? I mean, what's the percentage of fresh ingredients at Subway? From what I understand, everything is heavily preserved and it's mass-produced and it's shipped to locations all around the country using, you know, whether it be air or trucks and things like that. So I don't think a lot of their product is fresh, especially when you consider the ingredients that are in Subway products, the heavy amount of preservatives that are in, you know, the large majority, certainly the meats, the deli meats. Now, you're talking about double meats in Subway, you're worried about the whole wheat bread or the enriched wheat that's been, you know, heavily preserved and added to so it tastes good and it stays fluffy and it does all these things, but it's certainly not, you know, real. It's not an earth-grown nutrient for sure. So that whole thing that you're eating, that whole Subway thing, is just a pile of chemicals, the way I see it. You're just shoveling a pile of chemicals and you're asking about wheat. So really, what you got to do, Marcin, is you got to stop, man. You got to go to the supermarket and you got to buy your own meal. You know, I don't want to be too overbearing. I'm certainly not your father here, but come on, man, what are you doing? Do you really think that Subway has your best interest in mind? You really think they're trying to provide you with the freshest, most healthy nutrients that you can get your hands on? Of course not. They're trying to turn a profit. You know, I mean, do your research on your own. But certainly the food that you handle with your own hand, that you make yourself in your own home, in your own kitchen, that you got on your own, you procured on your own, that's the food that you want to eat because that's what you know. Now you know what's in there. You know the quality of the food, and that's what you need to eat. And that'll turn your life around immediately. I could not imagine my digestive system trying to deal with all those chemicals from that Subway that you're putting in. All those chemicals your body has to deal with. It has to figure out, what the heck is this? How do we deal with this? This is abnormal. Gee, everybody, you know, all hands on deck. Stop all processes. So many different things happen when you contaminate your system with these foreign chemicals, which is why I talk about earth-grown nutrients. If we're only consuming earth-grown nutrients, our body's going to be able to handle that much easier, in my opinion. It just makes sense that way, doesn't it? I mean, the foods that have sustained our species since the dawn of time, odds are they're probably a little bit safer for all this crap chemicals that's put out there for profit. It's not put out for nourishment. It's put out for profit, right? Subway's not there to nourish us. It's there to make money. So, Marcin. Did I rant long enough? Hopefully I did. Hopefully I changed your mind and your outlook. Don't put your health in anybody else's hands. Your health has to be in your own hands. And that starts at home and that starts in your kitchen.
I don't want to read this question.
Hey, Mike, almond butter, raw or roasted, and do you soak your nuts? Daniel Deep Pan Aldred. Where are you from? Smiley face, winky sign. So, hey, Mike, do you or almond butter raw or roasted, and do you soak your nuts? All right. Well, how dare you, first and foremost, raw or roasted? What kind of question is that? Have them either way. I prefer raw. And, yes, I do soak my – got to watch how I say it because people can turn it into a soundbite. That's actually funny. It's like you didn't want to say it. But you can certainly soak them. Which is great. You know, 45 minutes is certainly would be a minimum. Sometimes, you know, overnight, you know, put it in before you go to bed, take it out first thing in the morning. It goes great on your oatmeal or as a snack by itself. Drizzle a little honey on top. You're ready to roll. Now, roasted, do you roast them yourself, which you can certainly do, or do you buy them roasted? I would prefer to roast them myself and no problem, but even bought roasted, not a problem. I would stick with raw much more often. And do I soak them as often as I can? What?
All right, the next question is from Matthew Achimon. He says, hey, Mike, stumbled across podcast and have become a huge fan. I've lost 120 pounds and put on a lot of muscle in the process with nutrition and exercise, but I am a calorie counter. I love the principles of the Dolce diet and have recently purchased Living Lean. Any tips for someone who is afraid to stop counting calories? The freedom from it sounds amazing, but the fear of not is overwhelming.
Yes, Matthew, what's up? I understand your concerns, and I am here to set you free, man. Focus on the quality of nutrients. The quality of nutrients while following our principles, right? The Dolce diet principles, earth grown nutrients. So that's the highest quality nutrients that you can get eaten every 2 to 4 hours or in even intervals. So now you're eating often, you're constantly supplying your body with the essential nutrients it needs to repair and rebuild and energize and perform all its essential bodily functions with these earth-grown nutrients, really, the healthiest, the best things on earth, every 2 to 4 hours. Eating until you're satisfied, not until you're full. Now, this for people like you, this is a big part of it. This is where the accountability comes in. Now, you can certainly eat, 10,000 calories of anything, and that is not appropriate for you. You could eat 1,000 calories of the same thing, and that again is not appropriate for you. So what you need to is find out what's appropriate for you to go where you want to go, which we talked about on previous podcast, skewing. Each decision you make, you want to skew it towards your goal. Now you said you've lost over 100 pounds, 120 pounds. I'm not going to forget those 20. You've lost 120 pounds. And it sounds like you still have more to go and still have more you want to. So now we need to skew you towards your goals and you need to make those decisions and be accountable. So the calorie counting itself, use your calorie to be comfortable. I mean, this is all about, I'm a coach. I'm trying to coach you and teach you how to make the right decisions, the decisions that make the most sense for you. So start off counting calories. That's absolutely fine, but adhere to the same principles. Look at the recipes. In Living Lean or the Living Lean Cookbook, look at the recipes that I have out there and find one that fits your calorie count and start to eat that and then play with that a little bit and see where your appetite takes you, see where your body takes you. Follow that, and after a while, you won't have to worry about counting calories anymore. Now, a lot of people use that because it's very clinical. 2 + 2 = 4. And that certainly can, but you neglect other areas. Simple calorie counting typically doesn't focus on nutrition. I'm going to cover this actually a little bit deeper in the podcast. I'm going to talk about nutrition myths or weight loss myths and facts. And this is one of the topics. So, Matthew, when we do circle back to the calorie count, I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about that and talk about this a little bit more. But to finish your question right now, do it. I mean, whatever makes you comfortable. And again, I want to say, and I say this all the time, speak with your doctor first. Build your plan with your doctor. Take the recipes to your doctor and say, "Doc, what do you think about this?" I always say we should be best friends with our doctor. We should have a great relationship with our doctor. Everything we do, our doctor should know about within reason to keep us healthy because our doctor is a product or an assistant to us to help us keep healthy. We hire a professional to come in, like we hire a mechanic, we hire a doctor, a specialist to take care of us, to look after us, to analyze certain data feedback, to make sure that we're as healthy as we should be. So certainly speak with that in person about this and then develop the plan moving forward. But if calorie counting is what's worked with you in the past, great way to start. But eventually, like you said, you want the freedom of what Living Lean offers to so many people. And the C, don't listen to me because my name is on it. Check out my Twitter profile. There's a favorite section on my profile page at the Dolce Diet. We have probably 4,000, close to 4,000, maybe it's more, but it's so darn many. All unique testimonials or feedback or stories. I mean, many of you people, you guys listening right now, it might have been you or you might have read it or see all the retweets that I do. It's thousands and thousands and thousands of people that just talk about their experience. That's why, and I'm sharing this information with you. I'm telling you, and these people, they're not counting calories. And you'll see the tweets, "Don't count calories, make calories count." Like, "Oh, you're so right," or "Living lean, I feel amazing. I can't believe how much energy I have and how much food I'm eating and how my body's responding to this style." Because everybody thinks a fad diet is the way to go. Everyone thinks that I call it a fad diet or a template diet. Now, if those diet plans worked, everybody would be in shape, right? I mean, God, how many books do you have, or how many books have you read, or how many people at your office or on your team have followed one of these new programs? I mean, you think back over the last year, the last 10 years, the last 20 years, there's so many that have come through. But again, we're less healthy than we've ever been. We're, larger, more obese than we've ever been. We're having more lifestyle-related issues and diseases than we've ever had before. All this great information's out there with the beautiful covers on the book and the fancy sayings and the logos and the little tricks and tips and do this in a couple days and cure your life forever. That stuff doesn't work. Diets don't work. It's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle behavior modification. And we all have to start where we are right now. So Matthew, for you right now, you're used to calorie counting. That's awesome, man. Keep counting your calories, be educated, know what you're doing, but build a plan because eventually you won't need to. Eat every 2 to 4 hours based on what you did, what you're about to do. You be accountable to your goals. You eat until you're satisfied, not until you're full. It makes it really easy. Life is easy. I can go through my life and just eat anywhere, anytime, and sticking to those principles, and I stay in pretty good shape. And it seems a lot of other people do too. So just start there. You know, test it, learn it, and grow. Build your own plan, Matthew. That's really the way. Build your own plan. That's what this is about. It's different for everybody.
All right, our next question is from Jared Mercado on Twitter. He says, "Hey Mike, what are your thoughts on carb backloading?"
Jared, what's up, man? Carb backloading is very interesting. Carb backloading is a type of intermittent fasting, and I've spoken about this before. Where in essence you don't eat. I don't want to use the word starve, but it's kind of what you're doing. You're not feeding your body, you know, all day for you know 12 hours or 16 hours or you know 8 hours, depending on the program. Some for 24 hours. I mean, there's some pretty extreme intermittent fasting style programs. Now, carb backloading is one that's a little bit different in that it focuses more on the cosmetic, more on the bodybuilding side, you know, big, full, round muscles, you know, reduced levels of body fat, you know, kind of shrink wrapped skin around, you know, exploding, you know, vein bulging muscles, the carb backloading system. And what the basic premise is, you restrict, you know, calories, you restrict nutrients, all day long. And then you have a hard training session, you know, middle or later in the day, late afternoon. And then you gorge yourself on very high sugar foods, lots of processed sugars, actually. Gorge yourself. And what the thought process is, your body is so hungry. It's been so, you know, deprived all day. It's so hungry. And then you know, you take it further into the hole with this kick-ass workout. All the nutrients you put in go right to the muscles. They go right to restoring the most essential areas. And bodies tend to respond. They actually do respond rather well initially to processes like carb backloading. I'm not an expert at it. You know, I've toyed with it a little bit. I have, you know, some friends and people in the industry that certainly do it, that know about it much better than I do. I found it to be less than sustainable. So it's not a sustainable way of life. There's a lot of different programs that you can jump on and you can have certain results, short-term results. You know, photo shoots and physique competitions and you know, fights and things like that. But sustainability, that's kind of my vantage point. That's what I talk about and what I think about is the, you know, the sustainability, the longevity, kind of, you know, you're constantly making even distributions, you know, you're constantly investing, you know, at a regular rate, you know, every month for, you know, every year and every decade you keep on going, you know, over and over. That's more of my philosophy, a sustainable philosophy, where kind of the carb backloading style, it's less sustainable. The intermittent fasting style is not sustainable. You know, as far as I've seen, most people that follow it, they come off of it. The vast majority, I think, is fair to say. Even paleo, you know, people that follow the paleo, there's a lot of things I do like about the paleo diet, but it is a little too restricting, and it hasn't proven to be as sustainable for the majority of people. A lot of people do revert back to their old ways. Something about it was difficult for them to follow. So it was not sustainable. And a lot of the things that I try and bring up and talk about are sustainable, you know, sustainable ways to truly make a lifestyle change, you know, which I think is, you know, helpful, hopefully very helpful. So carb backloading, you know, kind of a bodybuilder's thing, short-term thing. You know, a lot of, you know, the younger guys can probably get away with it better. You know, the, you know, 18 to 28-year-olds, you know, that are trying to look in a look great, you know, and don't really have to think about the internal effects. You know, me personally, I like more of the earth grown nutrients, so a lot of the processed sugars. I understand what the response is on the body, on the muscle, on that cosmetic look. But I try and look a little bit farther, a little bit deeper. Who's the nutrition per calorie is always, you know, kind of where I look at it. So that's why, you know, I wouldn't suggest it. But you know, it does have pretty, you know, decent short-term effects, you know, when used in moderation.
Our next question is from Michael Maletti on Twitter. He says, "Hey coach, what's your opinion of lentils, yay or nay?"
Lentils, yay! Lentils are absolutely awesome. Lentils are a high-energy food. Lentils contain protein. Lentils contain carbohydrates. Lentils contain fiber. Lentils are delicious, and they're easy to prepare. You know, they're as simple as boiling water. You can turn them into stews, just, lentils lightly soaked, lightly soaked and sprouted. And there's just so many ways. And lentils are a superfood. They're a power food. Great to mix with stews and chopped vegetables, and you could, make soups out of with lentils. Great base. It's a great vegan, alternative, alternate protein source also. So big fan of lentils. Now, moving on. Q&A, we're going to pause on the Q&A. We're going to come back to a little more Q&A. UFC 156 pick'em winner, Andy McChesney. Now, you guys remember every so often we do a pick'em contest. What is a pick'em contest? Basically, whatever the main card, the televised card is going to be, I want you to tell me who's going to win the fight, how are they going to win, and what's the time. Now, whoever picks the most wins something. Last contest for UFC on FX, it was a gold package, which is Living Lean Cookbook, Three Weeks to Shred It, and a T-shirt. This time it was the exclusive, never before sold, the Dolce Diet Corporate, which is our V-neck shirt. Kind of corny, but it's a super sweet shirt, and a lot of people wanted them. I've been wearing them around, and people are literally taking them off my back. I went to Brazil with eight of them. I went back with one, the one I was wearing. So see the thieves running around, all my friends, and we wanted to share it with you guys. So Andy McChesney, he won the UFC 156 contest, and he's from Scotland, UK. So Andy, you will be getting a size large Dolce Diet corporate V-neck T-shirt, and I want to see a picture because you're gonna look badass, man. And that's cool that you're in Scotland. So it is a nice shout out, a little international feel. Moving on, we got Alleged Sports with the Bob. The Bob, what's up, man? Provenly. It has been provenly alleged, this whole segment.
I stand by that.
What's up, man? What's going on in the world of sports?
Last week it was announced that David Beckham just signed a deal over in France top league, which is pretty interesting because Beckham's 37, so I think it puts a myth to that.
What kind of deal did he sign?
He signed a 5-month deal, so basically it's for he signed a deal with PSG, which is Paris Saint-Germain. It's
Which is a
top,
soccer team, and that's a
yeah, so
major, yep, big league.
worldwide powerhouse for sure.
It's like the NBA for soccer.
Yeah, absolutely. So he signed a 5-month deal over there.
What is 5 months? That's a season.
5 months. Well, it's for their last half of the season.
Okay.
So he's pretty much. Well, he was playing in LA. His LA deal just expired. They won the championship and all that, and he's been playing at a really high level. So
Did he
he
get a
was.
pay upgrade?
I haven't found anything that discloses how much he got paid, but
How was he playing?
he's playing awesome. That's why they signed him. So he's 37 years old. So I think it puts a myth to
37 years
when
old,
you
he's
get to
putting
your
up.
mid to late 30s that you're all washed up and done for, which I don't believe it because there's guys like Kurt Warner, Floyd Mayweather, Ichiro, Derek Jeter, Kobe Bryant. Like these guys go out there night in and night out, and they perform at high levels. And they're in their late 30s. It's just a will to want to compete. Then you've got these other guys like Alex Rodriguez, Albert Haynesworth, Barry Zito, these other guys who are signing the same money deals that these other guys are, but they just, for some reason along the line, they lose it. And I just think that it's not about the age, it's about the will to want to compete. I think that's also what separates MMA from other sports, is because a lot of people, when they're watching NBA, they don't really care because they think, oh, these guys are getting paid way too much money. They're not giving it at all. They're done for. A lot of these sports clubs even pay for these guys to walk away. Like Elton Brand's making $18 million this year, getting paid by the Philadelphia 76ers, but he's playing for the Dallas Mavericks because they just are tired of his services and they paid him to walk away because he's not competing at a high level no more. Which in MMA, you got guys who are how many guys off the top of your head can you say are in their late 30s? Anderson Silva, Randy, even though he's quote unquote retired, Dan Henderson, Chuck was fighting into his late 30s, 40s. All these guys are going out. GSP is going to be mid 30s soon. Mike Pyle, these guys are going out there, and I think that's why every Saturday
Yeah,
night,
Pyle's on a three-fight win streak, all
three-fight win streak.
finishes.
He's in his late 30s, which performing like these younger guys are performing too. It's just a will to want to compete. That's why everybody celebrates UFC. Because these guys go out there, they put it all in the ring, and it's like a Super Bowl Saturday every Saturday when the UFC's on, everybody gets together to have a party, and it's a great time. Whereas you celebrate the NFL one Super Bowl every year because you follow it, but you kind of lose interest because these guys are getting paid so much money, and they're not caring, so why should you care?
Yeah. Now, if a guy in the NFL gets hurt,
yep.
Does he get paid?
If he's – they're weird. They can drop him, though, at any point, and his salary is done for. Not necessarily guaranteed.
So if a guy in the NFL gets hurt, he yep. might not get paid the next week.
It's all about roster bonuses and like, signing bonuses, guaranteed. You get your guaranteed money up front, but you get the back end of the deal, you still got to perform, and they can drop you.
Is it like that any other – professional sport. NFL is pretty rough.
NBA and MLB are both guaranteed.
So in Major League Baseball, if you get hurt,
yep.
game two of 100 games, how many games are in a season? Typical. So if you get hurt game two of 162 game season, what happens to your salary?
Like A-Rod. A-Rod's a perfect example.
You get paid. If you don't produce, you show up to work. But if you don't produce, you get paid the same paycheck as if you didn't, and you can't get fired.
A-Rod's getting paid like he's a stud still hitting 50 home runs a year, driving in 130 runs. But if you look at his production in the field over the past 2-3 years, he's not carrying that over at all.
But he's making more money now.
He's getting paid $30 million a year.
So what's the difference between guys like A-Rod who are in their later 30s, in decline because he's putting up worse numbers than ever, and then you get guys like Beckham who is in same stage of life putting up the best numbers ever.
Yeah, Kobe Bryant still playing like he was when he was 21 years old. He's
Kobe's been
second,
in the league
second or third.
How long?
Scoring average, he's 17.
17.
16 years. Yeah.
So he's been in the league almost 20 years. Pretty soon, you got guys. Speaking of being in the league, Brett Favre. Yeah. How long was he in the NFL?
Won his first Super Bowl in '96. To put it in perspective, when he retired 2 years ago.
Yep.
He retired when he was.
So Brett Favre played at a very high level into his 40s. And again, he's known as being a good guy, a healthy guy, right? Normal guy.
Absolutely.
You don't hear about Brett Favre. I remember never hearing in his career about him being at the bar doing crazy things, running around. You never hear about Brett Favre and, supermodel wives jet-setting around the world.
I don't know about that. Brett Favre allegedly texting.
That was at the very end.
Indisposed pictures of himself.
But I'm saying, he's not burning the candle at both ends,
no matter what he's doing,
like some of the other high level athletes.
He's still going out there performing because he's got a will. I think the money in sports ruins the UFC, which separates the UFC from the sport. Because these guys are guaranteed deals, but they still got to go out there and they got to fight to get that money. Whereas A-Rod doesn't have to go out there and hit baseball, but he's still getting that money. Which is a total bummer, I guess you could say, on the sport.
Yeah, but you got other guys at the UFC.
Because I was a big baseball fan growing up, and I'm just banging on baseball because it's all in the media. But crazy, big baseball fan growing up, and once I started to realize money and what I'm making and how much work I do in a day compared to what these guys do, and then they get paid and then they can just do whatever. I mean,
it is absurd what baseball players
make.
It
is absurd, and it puts a shame on the teachers who go in and night out.
So you got guys in the UFC, on the other hand, that they, when they fight, that's how they get paid. If they don't fight, they don't get paid. If they don't stay in shape, well, they don't get paid. Baseball, on the other hand, these guys get so far out of shape, it's terrible. Baseball players, unfortunately, guys, come on. You don't look like freaking athletes in season. Out of season, you look even worse. What the hell's up with that? Now you got MMA guys. These guys, if they're out of shape, well, they're not getting freaking paid. If they're not in amazing shape, they're not getting paid. They're not paying the mortgage. They're not feeding the family, which is important. And then how well they do in this fight determines how well they're going to do in next fight. Will they get a pay bump? Baseball's and other professional athletes, they sign a contract 3 years ago, 6 years ago, 10 years ago, guaranteed bumps all the way through regardless of performance. And that's why, like the Bob is saying, you're not seeing that competitive drive anymore in these guys. Guys like A-Rod, come on, he's making how much a year now? $30 million a season. What's motivating him to get out there and really fix his swing, really find the ball? What's really motivating him? Seems like he's taking some shortcuts because he's been popping up in the news lately. That's the wrong way to go about it. And it probably is lifestyle oriented. Lifestyle changes. Money changes people big time. But it's really a reshifting of goals. It's a reshifting of focus. We're guys in the UFC. I mean, they're focused on their goals because if they don't win, their career could be over. Certainly competing at a high level. I mean, you can't go from the UFC really to anywhere else and keep that quality of life. You know, the large majority of guys out there, when they leave the UFC, they're going back to a different job, a different profession, a different career. Because the smaller shows, no matter how big the other shows are, really can't sustain a middle-class living for the average athlete past the UFC, which is, you know, a freaking hell of a lot of motivation. It's like a football player. You know, if you're in the NFL, if you're out of the NFL, man, what are you going to do? You might go to the CFL. You might play in some other leagues and do all right. You know, kind of, you know, hopefully, you know, get into the middle class for a few years. But then what? That's a short-term window also, and that fades away. So these guys, you know, that they're fighting, they're training, they're staying in shape, they're working, they're earning their paychecks, they're earning their bumps. You know, very, very, very interesting. God, it's crazy, the disparity in pay between baseball and MMA. When you look at the output, not the size of the sport, the viewership so much, but just the output of the individual, of the athlete, you know, comparatively. God, the MMA guys, they train so hard for so little, you know, by comparison to, you know, what a lot of these other athletes at their same level, you know, athletes at their same level given their own specific sport. Interesting. Moving on.
What about Ultimate Fighter last night?
Ultimate Fighter on Tuesday. That was freaking crazy, right?
The knockout.
Spinning knockout heard around the world. That was awesome. I can talk about this now because the episode aired, and that's what I think I'm going to start doing, start sharing with you guys a little bit some of the experiences of being a coach on Team Sonnen, the bad guys, the dark side on The Ultimate Fighter Season 17 on FX every Tuesday night. Awesome. And last night we saw – hey, spoiler alert, I got to tell you guys. If you're listening in another country, Australia, New Zealand, if you guys don't listen to The Ultimate Fighter – or if you haven't watched it yet, or if you follow it, I'm going to spoil it. So jump off for a few minutes. Give me like 60 seconds, 90 seconds. There you go. Cause I got killed on Instagram. I post a photo of Luke Barnett, wearing the Dolce Diet shirt saying, hey, congrats Luke. Cause he won last week on The Ultimate Fighter. And that's not a spoiler anymore. Cause that's way, way past news. People freaked out, flamed the hell out of me. I was just being happy for the darn kid. I got flame, so I learned my lesson. Spoiler alert. Ultimate Fighter last night, Uriah Hall from, you know, out of New York via Jamaica, Queens, New York. He fought Adam forget Adam's last name. I apologize. Adam Sella, that's right. A real tough guy, stand-up guy, awkward style. Reminds me of Dan Kramer from Season 7 of The Ultimate Fighter. Uriah went out there and knocked him out brutally in a fight when I was there I thought was actually a pretty good fight. You know, when I was there watching live, I mean, Adam was moving forward, throwing bombs, and Adam had a lot of finishes. All his fights were finished in the first round, and I could see why. The kid just moves forward. Something could land. Uriah did a great job getting range, getting distance. I think Uriah at his worst in the beginning of the fight versus Adam at his best, Uriah still won that part, but it was closer. As the fight went on, you could see Uriah's skill set and confidence start to build, and it just finished with this brutal, you know, spinning. Was it not quite a spinning heel kick? It was a spinning kick to the face, and Adam just was knocked out cold before he even hit the ground. You know, it was really intense, insane.
Tell us what it was like, man. What was it like there? Like what you saw on TV, where it was just...
Yeah, it was. It was for a while. You know, once Adam went down, anytime, at any fight, no matter what the rivalry is beforehand, as soon as a fighter loses consciousness, everybody stops. I mean, it's a point of reverence. Everybody stops, and it doesn't matter. We'll all do whatever has to be done to help this person, you know, get back to, you know, our level of reality again. And you see it a lot from, you know, you see it from time to time. Usually every fight card, you know, usually one guy goes down, and everything just stops until he gets back up. Not just till he gets back up on his stool, but until he stands up and walks out and leaves out. You know, I think Coach Jones, what he had said to Adam. At the end, you know, Adam got knocked out. And he came back too, and it was real quiet, you know, very respectful all the way through. Uriah especially, who's just a great, you know, gentleman athlete. Love guys like Uriah Hall. Adam got back up to the stool, and then he got up, and John, you know, told him to walk out like a champion, which, you know, was, I agree. You know, for the athlete to walk in and the walk out, it's not for us. It's not because they're already a champion. It's not for the fans. It's not for the viewers. It's for the athlete to walk out on his own feet. It's for himself. So for John, you know, to say that and to kind of, you know, coach and share that with his athlete in that moment, I thought it was special. You know, so Adam did walk out. He walked out, you know, walked in on his own power and walked out on his own power. What happened in between? You know, well, he just laid it on the line. And, you know, Uriah, I think Uriah really showed why he's so special. You know, so he's a guy certainly to keep your eye on. But also, you know, Luke Barnett, you know, we saw Luke win last night or last week, and Luke's was a devastating knockout. So now, you know, we got two guys, Team Sonnet, the Dark Side, leading at week three of the Ultimate Fighter on FX. You have questions about this stuff, you know, I'll certainly, after the show airs on Tuesday, if you want to leave them on the Facebook page, and I'll answer, you know, some of them, you know, on Thursday, you know, for you guys here, like we're doing right now. But if you're not interested in it, well, let me know that either. Let me know that too, and I'll talk about what I want. How about that? Just kidding. All right, so I spoke earlier about the myths of weight loss. Right, as we were speaking to, what was the gentleman's name who had the question about weight loss? And I said I would circle back to you. Was it Matthew? The calorie counting with Matthew, right? Matthew from, where's he? Matt from Texas. Calorie counting, the weight loss myths. So, little piece of relevant information. The New England Journal of Medicine recently published findings that, and where did we go? Quote, trying to go on a diet or recommending that someone go on a diet does not generally work well in the long term. Basically, a diet does not generally work well in the long term, and this was a published report about the myths of weight loss. So basically, a diet in the long term doesn't work. You know, go check out the MikeDolceShow.com. Check out the Facebook page. We'll post a link to the article. Read the whole article. It's not worth me, you know, reading about it now. I'm not, you know, just it's there, and it kind of rolls into what I wanted to talk to you guys about, which is the myths of weight loss. So what this report in the New England Journal of Medicine is saying, one of the myths of weight loss generally is that diets don't work. They don't. They're saying that diets don't work. They're agreeing with that. Diets don't work. What I'm saying is diets don't work. It's a lifestyle change. We talk about that all the time. That's the Dolce diet. It's not a diet. It's a lifestyle. That's all over our stuff. It's not a freaking diet. Don't follow a diet. It's a lifestyle. The choices that you make, they're about your lifestyle. And nutrition and weight loss, that's certainly a part of it. So there's some dieting myths I want to talk about with you guys. Calorie counting. Again, Matthew, we're going back to you. Now, calorie counting, there's a few different ways to break it down. A calorie is not a calorie. 100 calories of a donut or 100 calories of broccoli. Obviously. The calories are the same, but the nutrient type is so dramatic. Now, which one is better for you? If I'm simply following a calorie counting style diet, I will lose weight in certain ways. I will lose certain types of body mass. I will lose more functional weight and body fat possibly than I will if I'm focusing on quality. If I'm focusing on quality, well, I'll typically be retaining more muscle mass, more lean mass, more skeletal density. I will typically be healthier at the same calorie level. So if I'm eating 100 calories of broccoli and 100 calories of donut, if I'm eating 100 calories of broccoli, I'll typically be healthier than the calorie, than the donuts, right? So calorie counting right there, that hopefully takes it out of your toolbox, makes it not an option because it just makes no sense. If calorie counting is the answer, then I can eat just 1,500 calories of donut and crap all day. And as long as I burn 1,600 calories in that day, then I'll lose weight. Well, yeah, I will lose some weight, but I'm going to lose the wrong type of weight. I'm going to get really unhealthy because I'm not fulfilling my nutritional needs. I'm not getting all the nutrients that I need, the nutrients that I could get from much more quality sources, earth-grown nutrients. That's what we'll point towards that category. Now, I have a balanced diet of a 1,500 calorie diet of the highest quality earth-grown nutrients as to 1,500 calories of whatever processed chemical garbage is out there. Well, who's going to be healthier? Who do we think, common sense-wise? Now, let's think about this. Really, let's think. 1,500 calories, you know, of the most, you know, cleanest, most natural, you know, whole food, earth-grown nutrients – or 1,500 calories of chemically created crap. What's better for you? Well, of course, the quality is. All right, the quality stuff. So calorie counting, it doesn't matter. It's nutrients. It's nutrient quality. That's the litmus test right there, I would think. I don't know if I can explain it any better. That shows you it's not about the calories. It's about the quality. The quality of nutrients matter. Now, to take that even further, with higher quality nutrients. We don't have to consume as many calories to equal what we would have had to consume with inferior calories or inferior ingredients. Because if I'm only eating a donut, well, I might have to eat 5 boxes of donuts to get a certain type of nutrient. Not that I can think of any nutrients in there. Where I might only have to eat a cup of grapes to get that same level. And that's, you know, I don't know if that's applicable, but that it's the metaphor. That's what I'm trying to put in your head right now. Again, it's quality. I have to eat a heck of a lot more bad stuff to get any good stuff out of it. So why don't I just eat the good stuff? So now I can get as much good stuff in me as possible. Or if I am on a calorie-restricted diet, I definitely want to make sure those calories are jam-packed with nutrients. Nutrients. Calorie counting myth. Hopefully we've debunked that for you. Now the sugar-free myth, what's better? Sugar-free or, you know, sugar substitute, like, or sugar. So it depends on the type of sugar. Sorry, guys. Sugar-free or sugar added. What's the difference? Well, if it's not an earth-grown nutrients, if it's not a natural sugar, you shouldn't be having that product anyway, because that product in itself is suspect. I consider sugar a grape. When I want to have some sugar, I have a grape. I have some fruit, because it contains sugar. That's the type of sugar I look for. Sugar-free products are typically processed products. So it's a test. I tricked you. I got you. If you're eating a sugar-free product, it's because it's processed. And we shouldn't be eating that anyway. It's not an earth-grown nutrient. With, you know, I couldn't imagine any product that is. But if it's not, just think, what else is in there? What is the ingredient that is making up this sugar-free? It's typically a chemical. It's a creation. Because sugar is naturally occurring. You can get sugar from earth-grown nutrients. So that's where you should get it from. And you'll get certain other ingredients, benefits typically with you. Like when you eat grapes. You're not just getting the sugar, you're getting all sorts of other type of nutrition in you, where when you're getting sugar-free or man-made sugar, you're simply getting that spike. You're just getting the injection of sugar in your system and nothing else. There's no other benefit to it. So sugar-free makes no sense. Sugar-free Coke, God, what do you think makes it taste like sugar? And here's another thing. There's some sugar-free products that stimulate a chemical in your body that thinks you're getting sugar. And because you actually don't get sugar, your body begins to crave the sugar. So now you're teaching your body to crave sugar, and you're having the sensation of drinking the sugar, of tasting the sugar, but there's no sugar there for your body to receive, and your body freaks out. And typically, or can, I should say can, force you or sway you into caving in or craving sugar to the point that you just can't take it anymore. Think about that. That's crazy. Is that the type of life that you want? Again, we go to earth-grown nutrients. You want sugar, man, have some fruit. Sugar craving's gone. Frozen red grapes, I've spoken about those before. It is better than ice cream. Freeze some red grapes, put them in your freezer. You're craving sugar, have some of those. See what happens. The sugar crave goes away. It's crunchy. You can actually bite into them. It's like ice cream. It's like eating mochi. You guys are familiar with mochi. That's kind of like what it's like. It's you know, hard at first. You bite into it, it gets soft. It's just delicious. So now next one, high fat, low fat. Why not essential fat? High fat diets were in fad for a long time. And then the low fat diets were in fad. They typically go back and forth. Which one's better? You will see progress depending on how you determine progress. You will see progress on each for a short period of time, but typically it's not sustainable. What we should focus on is essential fats and having well-balanced fats in our diet and not focusing on high fat versus low fat. I eat what would be considered a higher fat diet, but the type of fats that I eat are essential fats. They come from the form of almonds, of avocados, of hemp, of olives, olive oil, of peanuts, did I say coconuts, in chia seeds, you know, all sorts of ways to get essential fats of fish. Of other animal proteins, all sorts of ways to get fats into my diet. So I certainly don't avoid fat. I embrace fat, but it's essential fats and it's clean quality, you know, the highest nutrition possible in the fats that I am getting. So the high fat versus low fat. Remember when people run around eating steak, bacon and eggs all day, every day, and they're, oh my God, I lost 30 pounds, this, that, and the other thing. And then all of a sudden they have, you know, issues. They can't go to the bathroom. You know, they're crapping, you know, cinder blocks sliding cinder blocks through a sandpaper hole. That's what, yeah, that's what was going on, because these people have no fiber. They have no antioxidants. Their body, ugh, it's disgusting. I remember those days, the high fat. They took a little science and they went really way too far with it. That falls into the fad diet, the template diet, the non-sustainable diets that we spoke about earlier. I'm talking about sustainability. So we focus on the essential fats and we get them in great moderation, you know, in all sorts of different sources. We don't eat too much of one. We try and eat a little bit of everything. That's the way to do it. It makes sense, right? Again, hopefully I'm making sense here. We're making sense. Now, cardio versus strength training for weight loss. What's the best way? Depends. I like resistance training. I like building muscle. Certainly. I like making sure I'm in an anabolic zone, anabolic phase, where my body is building. It's thriving. It's growing. Cardio also is very, very beneficial. Is it sport-specific cardio? You know, what is your sport? Are you a runner? Are you a cyclist? Are you a swimmer? Are you a gymnast? Are you a fighter? Are you a football player? You know, so your cardio should be sport-specific. Now, if it's just for cosmetic, there's different ways. Steady state cardio, which is going for a 3 or 4 or 5 mile run at 10 miles per hour pace, and it's going to take you 30 or 50 minutes. Steady state cardio, nice and easy. That does work. Not every day, not as a prolonged training protocol, but that, you know, 1 to 4 times per week, probably closer to 2 to maybe 3 times a week, alternated with some sort of interval sprinting, shorter term, higher intensity type of cardiovascular work. You can do it certainly running. You can do it cycling. You can do it swimming. You can do it on a rowing machine. You can do it with body weight exercises. And there's certain ways, you know, very many ways to do these interval type training. So a little bit of everything might be the best way for you, because we're trying to build muscle, but we're also trying to increase our cardiovascular, our cardiorespiratory output. We're trying to tap into that energy system also and burn off just a little bit through a different training application, not just the resistance training. You know, so cardio and strength training, there should be a little bit of each. But it depends on your goals. I mean, you know, are you a stay-at-home mom? Well, sure, you don't need to be training twice a day, you know, while conducting everything else. You'll make great progress training 3 to 5 times a week. You know, it doesn't have to be the 10 to 14 trying times a week that some professional athletes do. Again, all relative to your goals, cardio versus strength. It should be everything, but it should be applied, and it should be even. We're trying to push all those things forward without over-stressing and straining in one specific area. Now, talking about cardio, food or no food? Should I do my morning cardio? I get this question all the time, so I'm going to touch on it. Should I do my morning cardio in a fasted state? Well, that's up to you. Do you have blood sugar sensitivities? Are you under doctor's care? Speak with your doctor first and foremost. Make sure you don't collapse, you know, out on the road. That's very important. From there, now I'll talk about me personally. Me personally, I like a piece of Ezekiel toast and a little bit of almond butter, maybe a squirt of honey, you know, a little bit of a teaspoon of honey on there before I go for, you know, roughly a 45-minute run. If I'm going to go a little bit longer than that, I'm going to need something a little more hearty, because now I'm pushing past just the aerobic output and I'm digging a little deeper. Shouldn't do that. I don't prefer to do that. I am very sensitive. I'm very, you know, blood sugar sensitive. So I am in tune, I believe, with my own body, certainly. But up to about 45 minutes for me, just a little spike. Now, I've done it with just a little bit of water, a little bit of, you know, black coffee, and had, you know, very similar, you know, quality workouts. I just feel a little bit better with just a little bit in my stomach. And I certainly don't go any longer. If I'm going to go past 45 minutes or so, then I'm going to push that run later in the day, and I'm going to make sure I have a good meal inside me, because, again, I'm blood sugar sensitive. I want to keep my blood sugar nice and stable. I want to have a constant source of energy floating through my body. I don't want to bonk out. It's very easy to do. But, again, it's because I eat until I'm satisfied, not until I'm full. I don't overeat. I try and eat and take in just as much nutrients as I need to be vitally healthy. As much as I need to feel absolutely amazing is what I'm doing. And I ride that line. Now, if I'm going for a 2-hour run, which I do from time to time, well, I make sure I prepare for it. Train, my legs are up. You know, my body's ready for this cycle, this style of training. But also so is my meals. And I'm not going to do that first thing in the morning. Maybe, you know, I get up around, you know, 6 or 7, have a good meal, do a little bit of work, good stretch, and boom, get on the road by 10. Definitely. Maybe I'll have 2 meals, 3 meals in me. I'll do one, you know, between 2 and 6 o'clock. But you know, when it's just, you know, under 45 minutes, you know, that's up to you. But again, you know, make sure you don't have any blood sugar issues. Talk to your doctor. That's very important. We should all be very aware of our blood sugar sensitivities. Something, again, you know, talk to your doctor. Know everything about yourself. I think that's it. So weight loss myths. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, hopefully that we put out there. And it's the fad diet thing. fad diets, you know, just like the New England Journal of Medicine, just like they're, you know, stating. Again, check it out, the MikeDolcheShow.com, link to the article, read it. You know, kind of absorb what they're talking about. Diets don't work. Diets don't work. If diets worked, we'd all be freaking sexy as hell. We'd all be in a great, amazing shape, right, if diets worked. If all those diet books, think about all those diet books, and I'm not going to name them now, but I got shelves of them, and I've read every one. I got shelves of them. I'll show you guys when we go live with the video. They don't work. I mean, they're not sustainable for some reason. Now, maybe the science behind them is valid, and the science behind them would allow them to be sustainable, but for some reason, people don't sustain because it's more than just science. It's the social impact also. That's why it's a lifestyle. It's not a diet. I try through the Dolce diet, I try to take the social impact into consideration when I come up with my philosophies and my thoughts and when I talk about my beliefs or give my opinions. It's not just with the performance end. It's not just being 7% body fat, you know, on a specific day or weighing 155 pounds on a specific day. It's not just about that stuff. It's about the health side. It's all about the health side. It's about healthy, and it's about how can we be healthy for as long as possible? And then all the other stuff kind of falls into place. So that's really what the focus is, and that's what we're looking for, and that's what we're always trying to do, is always trying to make things healthier, make them better, skew them in the direction that you want to go. What is your goal? Skew it that way. Every decision that you make, we get just a little bit farther. We keep pushing. We keep going. You know, we keep turning in the direction that you should be going. And you know when you mess up. You know when you fall off. You know when you go in the opposite direction. And you know before you even do it, because it's a choice. So don't delude yourself to believe that it's not a choice. Every time you screw up, you screw up. Nobody else does it. It's not the environment. It's not your situation. It's your choice. You screwed up. You ate that. You didn't bring that. You didn't plan ahead. You didn't push hard enough. You didn't show up, right? You didn't show up to be accountable. I think that's a good one. You didn't show up. You weren't there to make the decision in the moment to skew you in the right direction. You went in the wrong direction. But it's because of you. It's not because of anything else. When you accept that, just accept that one point. Well, you don't need any other point. Now you just go in that direction. That's the main principle. It's up to you. And it's not just health and fitness and weight loss and all that stuff. It's not just performance. It is everywhere. It is career. It is relationship. It is finance. It is education. It's growth and development. It's confidence. It's security. It's everything. Just be accountable. Be there. Be present. Make those decisions. Sometimes they're tough decisions. But the answer is always so much better than the other way. It's hard to make that decision not to eat the donut and Krispy Kreme and the red light's on right now. But you know what? I got my lunch with me. I took the time to make it last night. Or my wife made it for me. Or I made it, you know, for my family and they're eating it right now. That's showing up. That's being present. That's being an adult. You know, that's being successful. It's just making that decision, that simple decision. And you know what? Your day goes on better and you skew. Again, boom, you just skewed in the direction that you want to be going, that you should be going, that you deserve to be going. You know, so now you're making up time. You're not going the other way, because if you go other way, well, it's one step back, two steps back, and you have to retrace those steps just to get to point zero to start skewing again in the opposite direction. So what the hell? Start skewing now. Life is short, right? Life is short. What the hell are you waiting for? I don't care if you're 14 or if you're 44. Now's the time. Now. Let's do this. This decision, every decision, skew it in the right direction. You can. We can. Right? So let's do it, everybody. Great show. Thank you guys very much. I'm excited. You know, I feel like we're building something special here. I have been amazed at the feedback that we're getting from everybody, from all you. Keep it coming in. And this is our show. We're growing this together, as you guys can tell by now. Lots of your voices are being heard in the show and in our topics. And when I speak to you, I know your desires. I know your questions. You know, we get hundreds of them every day, you know, thousands a week. So it's great, because we directly know what, you know, you guys want to talk about, you know, what you want to hear about, what your problems are, what the hurdles, what obstacles. And together, let's work on it. Let's fix it. And let's have some freaking fun in the process. And let's keep it real. You know, if you're flubber with fat tits, well, shit, I'm going to tell you. You know, and if I'm slurring my speech, and you know, if we need new microphones for Brandy and Bob, well, I agree 100%. We're going to get that stuff done too. So we're going to keep progressing. We're going to keep skewing. We're skewing in the right direction to get better constantly. And hopefully here we are, episode 10. We've skewed just a little farther. Go back to listen to episode 1. And here we are at episode 10. We're certainly not perfect. We never will be, but we're skewing. I think we're just a little bit better because we've been trying. So hopefully you've noticed that we're trying, and hopefully the next 10 episodes, we're going to kick it up just a little bit. So guys, thank you so much for paying attention and for being involved in the Mike Dolce Show. To get at me, hit me up on Facebook. I'm on there all the time. You could see me. I pop up there all the time. Facebook, The Dolce Diet, or at Twitter, at The Dolce Diet, thedolcediet.com, mydolcediet.com, my as in yours. That's actually a pretty fun site, community site. You know, all that good stuff. The Dolce Diet Living Lean and the Living Lean Cookbook, even 3 weeks to Shredded. We're almost done the revised 3 weeks to Shredded. I'll talk about that later. So you know, guys, we are going to hook you up. We are putting out a Valentine's Day special for you. And ladies, too. Ladies, if you're in. The Dolce Diet Valentine's Day menu. Now, Brandy wants me to say it's 10 healthy recipes that say, I love you. Now, let's grapple.
Awesome.
She likes that, but I didn't feel comfortable. I want to say, here's 10 great recipes to trick your significant other into thinking you know how to cook so they can thank you later. Cookbook. How's that title? My title might not fit on the cover, but come on, everybody. So we're going to put 10 recipes, and it's going to be free on Kindle. Hook up to you guys because you guys are freaking awesome. This is, you know, one of the things I did when I was courting Brandy. I actually tricked her. Well, I actually did know how to cook. But on a Valentine's Day, I actually did make a meal, and it worked. It was hot. Look at her now. Yeah. She's thrilled. So check that out. That'll be on Kindle. We'll announce that soon, the Dolce Diet or everywhere else. And, guys, thank you so much. Remember, don't count calories. Make calories count. Boom!
The Mike Dolce Show.
Cause you can't, you won't, and you don't stop. Cause you can't, you won't, and you don't stop. Oh, we-